The Breakfast Club.
What did you have for dinner last night, Whitey? Because he's back with us. Hello, Adam.
Good morning. How are you?
Going great.
That's good. I'm tired today.
What's happened?
No, I'm not sure. You know when some days you wake up, we obviously get up very early anyway, but you're just really tired and there's no real reason for it? I've had one of those mornings.
You've had one of those?
But I'll be all right. I'll be fine.
Will you lift? Will you rally?
Of course I will. It's your character.
It's important.
Yeah.
Very important.
Yes.
Adam Romanaskis is with us. He's a Bombers Premiership player, reliving his glories this morning. He was. In the pre-show meeting.
I didn't realise that he was such a negative footballer, like a stopper. A sort of, you know, limited skills that he would have to be given a defensive role.
Armacross sort of fella. Armacross.
A negative role.
Armacross. These days, he's not only a Premiership player, he's a manager to the stars for the future Premiership players out there. And he's back with us again. Good morning, Rama.
Good morning. First, I want to say it's terrific to look out the window and there's daylight.
Isn't there?
That means, you know, things are starting to just turn. Usually...
Well, the weather's turning.
In some instances, when we're in here in the morning, it's not light until sort of around 7, quarter past 7.
Quarter past 11.
And then in about 3 weeks' time, it'll get dark again.
Daylight in the morning. Daylight saving. Yeah. Yeah. But that's okay. That's okay. Hey, look at the positives. Look at the positives.
He took you down there very quickly.
I did.
Very quickly.
Just dragged me.
Sorry.
He took you down very quickly.
Sorry. Okay? I'm sorry.
21 degrees today. You know, it's a good day to maybe cut the grass properly this time, Whitey.
I do it early.
It's cut a prop.
Rain's coming in around about lunchtime. There'll be some potential hail and thunderstorms.
A little bit of fertilizer.
Hail and thunder?
Yep. There'll be some significant winds.
Fertilizer today?
Not a good weekend weather-wise, so I'd get it done early.
What about my picnic?
I'm scratching my head about that.
What's going on with my picnic?
I'm allowed to go, if I'm fully vaxxed, with another family that are fully vaxxed, but 5 people, is that correct?
I don't know.
And we're allowed to drink coffee with no mask, but alcohol, have to have a mask on.
Which is a challenge.
And how do you drink alcohol with a mask on?
Well, basically they're saying if you're outdoors, you can't drink alcohol. That's effectively what they're saying. Now, I'm not sure.
I'm a little bit confused about all this.
Not sure the science that backs that up. I don't know about the data and the science on that one, but it does seem odd that you're allowed to drink other beverages that are non-alcoholic with your mask down, clearly, because that's how you get it in. But when you require alcoholic beverages, the mask is required to be up.
I think people...
Difficult. It's a challenge to get in, Whitey. Now, I know you don't drink, but trust me, when there's something covering your mouth, getting something into your mouth is a challenge.
I would imagine so.
I think people just want to know when they can go see their parents or their parents can have the kids at their house and we can go to a pub or a restaurant or a cafe.
Well, I think
hopefully
that's
Sunday.
Sunday.
Fingers crossed. And then we can sort of all look forward to something.
I want to know how they're going to police this. Are you fully
vaccinated? Well, they said yesterday that they're not going to.
Fantastic. What a great idea that is.
So, are we getting these vaccination passports or?
I don't know, man.
Because you're
basically superhuman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know the answers to these questions, don't you? Yes.
Basically superhuman. Yeah. 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 I'm untouchable.
So anyway, look, we look forward. We always look forward. Hopefully then kids can go back to sport, kids can go back to school, Whitey can play golf so he gets happy again, and we can get back to normal life.
It does sound unusual that you can go to a picnic with 5 others and have no masks and eat and communicate with each other and talk on a rug, but you can't play golf.
Well, you're allowed out, which is ironic because you're allowed out for 4 hours as well, which is sort of the window, isn't it?
To exercise.
You can actually have a picnic on a golf course, on a fairway, with 5 adults and some children running around on a rug in close proximity to each other without a mask, eating and drinking non-alcoholic products.
Of course.
Chatting, laughing, but you can't play golf.
No, can't do that.
That's enough of that political stuff.
Yes.
It's not political, it's just life stuff these days. I need to know. It's been at me, because our man's birthday is today.
Who?
Our man.
Was it? Yeah. Oh, apologies. Happy birthday. Didn't even know.
Didn't you listen yesterday?
Oh, that hurts. I did listen yesterday.
Well, you couldn't have listened very well.
I listened from 7 right through to 8:30.
Lots of references to the birthday from our man yesterday.
When I was listening to Brad Johnson.
44, he was our man yesterday.
Well done.
Johnny Platton, Simon Madden.
Well done.
No, Justin Madden. Who else?
Shane Kerrison, Richard Osborne.
Shane Kerrison.
Justin Madden.
Richard Osborne would have been a hero of yours.
He was. Yeah. He was, very much so.
But we had concerns, Rammer. There was concerns about, because as you know, in the White family, you get to choose the meals on your special
day.
All three.
All three meals.
Yes. In fact, all five.
Yes. All five. Or do we get sort of, you go into the brunch, afternoon tea,
yeah.
What about supper?
Well, we had a pretty significant dessert last night, so I was tempted for supper because there were still some things left over, but I thought I'd just sort of push them over into today.
Oh, leftovers sort of style, okay. Yeah.
So the challenge, because he'd ordered the parma for dinner.
Oh.
The chicken parma for dinner. But he was going to go the roast chook rolls for...
With the gravy?
For lunch.
Gravy?
Well, potentially.
Supermarket, sort of, get a chook, get some fresh rolls.
Yeah, fantastic. Break the meat, break the chicken up.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, yeah.
Bit of cheese in there too.
Oh, well, no, yeah.
But he was concerned about the back-to-back.
Yeah, sometimes.
Back-to-back chicken was the concern.
A few hormones in the chicken, yeah.
Oh, so they tell us. So I need to know what's happened. And the listeners are coming for it as well.
Oh.
What happened? What happened at lunch? What happened at lunch?
What happened, mate? What happened?
Johnny Rolfe wanted to get involved too. Stephen Milne, Corey Enright getting some nominations for 44 as well. What happened for lunch?
Well, I didn't want the double chicken situation. And I had a lot of people were texting me all morning, what are you going to do? Don't want the double chicken, do you? Double chicken's fine because chicken rolls are very nice. So in the end... I kept it pretty simple. We just went Hungry Jack's.
Well, for lunch?
For lunch. Because we weren't getting takeaway for dinner because I'd requested homemade chicken parmigianas.
Double whopper with cheese?
Perfect job. Guaranteed it was. And bacon.
Double whopper with cheese and bacon?
Yeah, 100%.
Chips? Chips?
Yeah.
Coke?
Yeah, I didn't go the additional bacon double cheeseburger deluxe because it was lunch. They didn't want to sort of overdo it because we had a pretty significant afternoon tea booked. So... we just went with that.
There was no mention of afternoon tea yesterday.
Well, that's par for the course.
Mate, that's scones, jam and cream.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah.
No doubt.
Tea setup.
No doubt for why.
Yeah.
There was no mention of this yesterday, the afternoon tea.
In a former life, when I used to do a little bit of other work with Whitey, the significance of the scones with jam and cream at halftime it was a significant event for Whitey. Significant.
Like the cookie monster.
Oh, how the cream and the jam would be piled on the scone. And then down his shirt 10 minutes later.
Well, that's incorrect. I wouldn't waste anything.
And then he'd be flustered, call it a game of football.
So, yeah, so I was pretty happy with the mix, to be honest, because pancakes for breakfast, vanilla slice for morning tea, Hungry Jack's for lunch, and then the Devonshire tea set up for afternoon tea, then the chicken parmigiana with chips and salad, and then apple crumble for dessert. So I was happy with that mix.
Did Emma put the chips under the parma?
Of course not.
Why not?
Because we don't do that. That's bad.
If Emma would have put the chips under the parma and served it on to you, what would have been
firstly, she wouldn't have.
What would have been your reaction?
Well, it would have been sent back.
Sent back. Can you imagine sending it back at home?
And I can imagine that would have been sent back straight into Whitey's face too by Emma. If that was the case.
Oh, no, the water out the nose situation there.
He knows I'm not lying here either.
That's a disaster.
No, Emma did a terrific job. I mean, in all seriousness, though, it's pretty depressing having your birthday in lockdown. Couldn't see anybody. The presents that I'm apparently getting didn't come because they were in the order situation, and there's been a backlog, so no gifts of any description.
Well, Australia Post, just on that, Australia Post is saying,
"Well, it's not all right, Daniel.
If you want presents delivered for Christmas, 8 weeks is the lead time to make sure you get them."
Yeah. So anyway.
That's. Did you let Emma know about that?
Well, she's got to get herself probably a little bit more organised.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Did you tell her that as well?
Absolutely.
I think there's a few holes in this story.
I'm thinking of rescheduling my birthday, having another go.
Didn't you go to the pancake parlour last year?
No, we were in lockdown.
Are you sure?
It was 2 years ago.
John from Hastings was just concerned about that off the SMS.
He went to the pancake
parlour. Karen.
What Saturday's 6th birthday at the pancake parlour? And you're having your 40th there?
No, I had my 42nd there. Absolutely, I did.
Did you have party hats as well?
No, we were at 10-pin bowling and then we went to pancake parlour.
The tab have opened up a market. The over under Whitey getting to 45 with that meal yesterday.
David King's gone on the unders.
You're going to hit the mat.
Great to have Gary Player sending his best for Whitey there. So the over-under at market at the tab is 45. Get involved, tab.com.au.
You can laugh as much as you like, but I went up to James at about 11:30 and said, "Hey, James, do you want to have Hungry Jack's for lunch?" His response was, "Are you serious? Are you joking? Are you serious?" I said, "No, serious." "Oh, yeah, absolutely." So I'm bringing joy to my family's lives. So you
hang
love
on
as
a
much
second.
As you like.
Hang on a second. Don't even think about trying to make this about somebody else. Don't even think anyone's buying that, making it about somebody else.
And we got lolly bags as well at the end of the night, so it was great.
You got lolly bags?
I guaranteed. Absolutely. Jersey caramels, milk bottles.
Jersey caramels.
Oh, Jersey caramels.
Oh, no.
Oh,
no.
They are the creme de la creme.
What a
they
waste.
Are the creme de la creme of the lolly.
They're the black cats.
Oh, please.
Disgusting things they are. Jersey caramels of all the things you could have had. Whoa, that upsets me. Oh, no more water at the nose. It's been a big morning for everyone. John's on the road. Let's get to John. Straighten up a little bit. John, can you help us out?
How you going, fellas?
Going all right, buddy.
3 points, mate. Some great interviews with Nita. Good to meet him the other day. And tell Quinny thanks to get the TAB back to talking to people instead of a stupid computer.
All right, I'll bring it up with
Quinny.
Yeah, right.
Quinny would have had a big part to play in that. So
he's the man.
And Whitey, fantastic, mate. You make too much sense for the government or the AFL to do anything. What you spoke about yesterday, having the footy. I got a whole footy week, mate, with local footy and stuff. I think it's a great idea, mate. You want to get people back on board. Do that, mate. I don't know if this Dan Andrews is in next year, mate. We'll be doing nothing again. You just ruined the whole Everton sport. Grand Prix down the island. I'm sick of him, mate. Sick of him.
I did hear your little take on the...
Thanks, John.
..country finals and the like yesterday. I'm on board with that, but not... bringing the finals to the MCG.
No, I don't think so either, necessarily. What?
It's exactly what you wanted.
Yeah. You wanted the Festival of Football.
Yeah, I do want the Festival of Football.
Yeah, but not at the MCG.
Yeah, but I wasn't sure that one.
I'm not going to use MCG Marvel Stadium anymore. Sort of.
Devonshire IT has got to my head.
It's chaos. Absolute chaos.
You're right, Rabbi. I did say that yesterday.
That's the part that I was listening to yesterday.
No, I thought initially...
That's
right.
That's a good point.
He was also very big on the... he's very big on the Ovens and Murray League yesterday. He mentioned Ovens and Murray.
I love the Ovens and Murray League. I grew up with the Ovens and Murray League, okay? My North Albury footy jumper was my pride and joy.
Goodness me.
No, because I thought initially the opportunity for country leagues to come to Melbourne, the opportunity to play at the MCG would be a pretty special thing. Mm. Then I thought about it. And then I thought, well, those grand finals are often huge for the region.
Correct.
Or for the community.
People come up, accommodation, all
that's
that
right.
type of stuff,
so,
pubs, restaurants.
100%. So what I was thinking later was then, well, maybe the, say, Fox Footy or Channel 7 mm-hmm. could actually take it to them. So we've had, you know, the NAB Challenge or whatever that used to be called, the community series where you would set up the cameras and all that sort of thing at some of those beautiful country grounds, that maybe that could be the case.
You could, the way I see it, you would focus in on maybe two games, three games, okay, that you're showing actual extended coverage of. Then you'd have people around the grounds, at different grounds.
Yeah, something like
Victoria,
that. I'm not sure.
Promoting it, what's the score, all that sort of stuff.
But I think considering that there is no football being played, that it's just an opportunity to showcase all the different type of football. And there might be a game in Alice Springs that they play, or they might, you know, the Waffle or the Sandful. Anyway, I just think it's an opportunity to showcase grassroots footy, because the feedback I get and the feeling I get in the community is that there are more and more people that are going back to community football, and they're preferring community football to AFL football. And I'd love to know why that's the case.
You need a forum.
Wow. Well, meant to have one today, but it didn't happen.
What forum today?
I got a forum with myself. I just debate myself.
And that's going to be a long conversation.
Now, there's a lot of text messages coming through.
What are they saying?
I just want to make it clear. I don't have that sort of meal set up every day.
Wow.
All right?
That's a grey area. That's there. Debatable.
It's a birthday.
That's
it's a day debatable. Of celebration.
Always, seemingly, always a celebration. Phil Murphy is the host of ESPN Sports.
I guarantee Center. You, Phil has played Super Mario Brothers.
I have no doubt
Maybe
about that.
Youth,
Phil, welcome.
I am 34 years of age, and my vote is Super Mario Brothers 3, just edging out the original. For the record, I support Adam.
There you go.
Righto, that's number 3, okay.
Why'd he sit there with this blank look on his face like he's never played the game in his life?
Well, I don't think he has.
I played the kart one when I was a kid.
Mario Kart.
Mario Kart, different. Hey, Phil, we're not here to talk about Mario Brothers, even though we probably could for 45 or so minutes. We're here to talk about the world of sport and your take on it. We've got the opening round of, well, the NFL season was last week. We kicked off in week 2 this week, obviously. What did you make of the opening round? Because there was a couple of interesting performances individually and also collectively.
Yeah, I mean, that's the storyline, and we are getting the second sample size of some of those, you know, in the coming days. I mean, Washington and the Giants, they kick off on ESPN in a matter of hours. And that's where we really start to see and start to answer questions like, are the Packers in trouble? Aaron Rodgers looked poor, not just average. He looked poor against the Saints, and the Packers got blown out unexpectedly. And if you look at the AFC across the board, the Chiefs had a very impressive comeback win against the Browns, as they're wont to do under Patrick Mahomes. But ESPN has its Football Power Index, its FPI, that ranks teams likeliest to reach the Super Bowl. Teams 2 through 6 in the FPI all lost. So now we're wondering, can anybody catch KC? Are the Bills' troubles going to be long-term? Will the Titans sort things out? Are the Ravens going to be able to rebound? So a lot of questions heading into week 2, and I think that those fan bases in particular are very keen to see their teams again to see, is this a blip or is it a trend?
We saw, from an Australian perspective, lots of punters out there doing cool things. But this Jordan Mailata story, like, it's just signed a $100 million deal, Aussie $100 million deal with the Philadelphia Eagles. Is he, like, in terms of his position, I don't know it well enough, I must admit, is he sort of ranking up there in the top couple in that position that he plays?
Well, yes. I mean, he had a few starts last season due to injury, but this was the first game in which he was the starter week 1. We have our choice of our 5 guys, and he's starting at left tackle. And it is very rare in the NFL for a quarterback to be left-handed. In fact, we went a good 5 years without a left-handed quarterback throwing a pass. So usually the left tackle lining up on the left side of the offensive line protects the quarterback's blind side. And on many teams, he is the second highest paid offensive player behind the quarterback. And you look, the top offensive tackles make $22, $23 million U.S., you can multiply that times 1.3 or 1.4 to figure out what that is in terms of Aussie dollars. But Jordan Mailata just signed a deal for 4 years, $64 million U.S. That's an average annual value of $16 million a year with a number of incentives on top of that. So he is in that top half to top third in terms of salary, and his performance, Pro Football Focus, ranks all the players on a 0 to 100 scale. They had Jordan in the top 10 at his position through week 1. He only allowed 2 pressures, 0 sacks allowed, had a very solid performance against, albeit a subpar defense, but job done, well done in Philadelphia. And I think that'd be very encouraged from what they saw from Jordan, with a lot of pressure having him just sign that big contract days prior.
So, Phil, let's change pace to the NBA. I've been following this Ben Simmons saga really, really closely. Now, I read yesterday that Philadelphia now are not looking to trade him. Now, is that simply because there's not a trade partner out there, his trade value is disputed, or Philadelphia simply do want him back?
Well, I don't think those are mutually exclusive. I mean, his trade value has diminished as a result of him underperforming in that Hawks series, and questions persisting, have we figured out how to stop Ben Simmons at large? That is certainly going to hurt the market for him. Their general manager, Daryl Morey, is notorious for not being forced into a deal. He's willing to wait things out. Ben Simmons signed a very hefty contract, and he's in the early stages of it. So any team that takes Simmons on is going to incur a measure of high financial risk, in addition to having to give up a number of assets, Philly wanting a lot back in return. And I think deep down, Philadelphia looks at the body of work that Simmons has presented, and they're saying that this is a blip and not a trend, that his problems can be rectified, and if he continues to shoot and build confidence that the team can adequately space the floor offensively with him on it. There's no concern whatsoever about him on the defensive side of the ball. He's one of the best defensive players at his position in the NBA. The question all comes down to, can you orchestrate an offense with him with his skill set today? You know, had Philly won that game 7 against Atlanta and then, you know, gotten hot, who knows? But what we saw in that series against Atlanta, in particular that game 7 at home, was somebody who died away from the spotlight, and that is the big concern. He says he wants out. Philly would be keen to keep him if they can, and they're not going to give him up for a discount at the moment. But that they're going to go under the pump in the final weeks. NBA tips off in about 4 or 5 weeks' time, maybe 5 or 6 weeks' time. So that is going to intensify as we get closer, and I don't think that story is going away.
First look at the quaddy tomorrow. It's race number 16 out Caulfield. There are 13 going around, and number 3, Anavisto, second up for the price, Kent Junior Yard. Johnny Allen in the saddle, $2.60 at tab.com.au. Is that fair?
I think that is fair, Daniel. It's a very tough quaddy, and this is the race we've got to... Unfortunately, the first leg, I usually like to try and load that up so we've got a bit in our favour, but I think hopefully after the first leg we'll still be alive with Anavisto. I think she's the one to beat. Her first up run was very good. The horse that beat her was Turath, who won the Group 2 Let's Elope Stakes last Saturday. And in that race, she gave Turath 3.5 kilos and all but ran her down. And Turath had the race fitness on her side. So I think certainly the one to beat. I think we're going to throw in a roughie in Miss In Between, who was the Rammer roughie a few weeks back and didn't have a lot of luck. Ran well. She's often been placed out of her grade. I think this is a suitable grade for her to run well. And the other one I'm putting in is the Adelaide Visitor Ecumenical, because she is an absolute beauty and ran well first up in winning in Adelaide. And we've seen her in Melbourne before. Last spring, she had very little luck in the series through to the 1,000 guineas. So she can run well first up. But I think at 1,400 from a good draw, Anavisto has to be the one to beat.
All right, Anavisto, all the roads there for Dino out of the good draw. Sounds like a pretty good form line to me. Quinny, what's the market saying?
She hits the market at $2.50 in from $2.60. Ecumenical's been a firmer as well, $6.50 into six, back to $6.50. And the other runner that Dino mentioned there for the quaddy, number 10, Miss In Between, currently 30 for the win, $7 the place. Boy. So hopefully can run a good race there. Dino with Anavisto does look like one of the more popular favourites on the program. Should punters snap up the $2.50 now? Do you think that's about right, or do you think the horse might firm as the day gets closer?
Look, I think I can't see many absolute standout favourites on the program. So I think they'll gravitate to her pretty strongly. When you look at that form line, when you look at how the race sets up, she's probably got Galgani leading from barrier 3, and Johnny Allen can either sit outside the lead, or if a horse like Need New Friends comes across from out wide, he sits in the 1-1. So I think not only has she got the best form line, she's probably going to get the favours in the run as well.
Alrighty, that's the assessment of race number 6, the first leg of the quaddy tomorrow, the Foresight for Living Legends Benchmark 90 mares, 4-year-old and up affair over the 1,400 metres. Rama, your job around here is to just recap the numbers for us. Can you do that for the first leg, please?
3.10.5.
3.10.5, pretty straightforward in the first leg of the quaddy. The second leg is the MRC Foundation Cup, Dino, a Group 3 affair over the 2,000 metres, and we've got a full field of 16 going around tomorrow. And Nonconformist for Graham Begg. Jordy Childs in the saddle is favourite at tab.com.au in a fairly open market. $4.40 the favourite.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Daniel, the brevity of numbers ends in the first leg. We've got plenty of numbers going forward. Rammer's got plenty to do in the next few races. I'm going to go with one at odds here in Ahmad. I think this horse is a bit of a star. He didn't race for a couple of years, and he was early favourite for the 2019 Melbourne Cup off the back of a win in the Belmont Gold Cup in the US over 2 mile. And we didn't see him for nearly 2 years. He ran fourth and a really good and bit unlucky fourth in the Easter Cup. And then he won really well at Flemington before a spell. I just think he's a bit of a chance in a race like the Melbourne Cup going forward. And I think first up at 2,000 metres is a great trip for him. And just at the odds, in a really even race, I think he's got a great chance. But I'm giving really good chances to Delphi, number 4, who I thought ran well. Only had the second run for the Freedman Stable and ran well at Caulfield. Will be fitter. 11 Nonconformist. This is third up 2,000 metres, as it was in the spring when he won the Kunji Handicap at this track and distance. And he's trying to get himself into the Caulfield Cup, because this is the golden ticket into the Caulfield Cup. I think he'll run well. I think 15, Charlie Rose. She's another one that's probably trying to get into the feature races, and her first up run was good. And I think Barrier 2 is a great draw for her to race close to the speed. But I'm giving little chances to 2, Angel of Truth. But, gee, it's getting on now between wins. He was a ATC Derby winner, and you'd love to have one of those, but it was 897 days ago. He's got some hope. And I think Chapada, he ran really well in this race last year, and I thought he ran okay at weight for age first up. He'll be fitter for that run. So, yeah, we're going far and wide and a bit of value as well.
Far and wide's okay with me. A bit of value, how much value? Maybe 20?
$16 for Dino's on top selection. Ahmad, who's currently $34 for the Melbourne Cup. Nonconformist heads the market at $4.40. Charlie Rose at $5.50. Angel of Truth at $7, in from $9.50. Ahmad, with the Melbourne Cup, Dino, do you think it's worth specking that $34, or do you think that's about right?
Bit of both. No, I think he's going to... I think he will shorten. I think he's, if he stays sound and in the form we saw earlier in the year with a lightweight in the Melbourne Cup, I think he's a bit of a player. He's got to qualify, but that's part of it. I think he's going well enough.
Just as a teaser, Dino, will we look elsewhere for a Rama Ruffy? Just as maybe something...
Yes, we will.
Oh.
It won't be as good. I will say it won't be quite as good odds, but I did want to include a few extra races
there
for you.
There you go. There we go.
So we've had a $34 chance in the quaddy and a $16 chance on neither are the Rama Ruffy.
And there's another Rama Ruffy around the corner.
In the second league, you're nearly going to get $2 a place in all those selections as well, there each way, we all day.
So the gift that keeps on giving. He's even thinking about adding other races for us on a Friday. This is magnificent. Rama, can you please go through those numbers for the second league again?
6, 4, 11... 5, 2, and 7.
6, 4, 11, 5, 2, 7. All right, let's get to the feature event of the card, race number 8. The third leg of the quad, it's the Ned Sir Rupert Clark Stakes. $1 million, if you don't mind. $1 million. Yes, you've got to put your finger in your mouth and just say it, Rama. Dr. Evil style. And we've got a full 16 going around. And Bo Rossa. Will Clark has come across from Adelaide with his galloper. Linda Meach back in the saddle doing awesome things. And Bo Ross's favourite at $4.40 at tab.com.au. Dino, is Bo Rossa in your numbers?
Oh, he certainly is, Daniel. He's a great chance. This is always a fascinating race because you've got the established class runners and they've always got plenty of weight. And then you've got the good Group 3, you know, trying to become Group 1 horses with the lightweights. And this is just about a perfect meeting of them because there's so many good 1,400-metre horses that actually like Caulfield, and so there's plenty to like about the race. And then all the class horses have come up with great barrier draws. The three favourites have drawn barriers 1, 2 and 3, so I don't think that's a disadvantage to any of them. So it makes for a great race. I just think Probabil's the best horse in the race. She won a Futurity here at Group 1 Weight for Age, beating Behemoth. And I thought that was a pretty comprehensive win. Behemoth's a very good horse, obviously, at Caulfield as well, having won this race last year in the Memsie for the past 2 years. So what a double that would be to win the Memsie twice and then the Rupert Clark twice. So he's certainly there. The one that I think is the best of the lightweights, and I'm putting it in for second, is Dice Roll. I think his first three wins in Australia are outstanding, all at 1,400. Then he's two defeats at 1,600 in slower run races, and I don't think he adapted to that tempo that well. Whereas this race will be run at a really strong speed. You've got lightweight horses taking their chances, likes of Buffalo River, Groundswell, Poland, Azar, Streets of Avalon. Bo Rosser will hold its spot from Barrier 1. So all of a sudden, you get the sort of speed that Dice Roll will love. And I think he'll blend into the race and look the winner at some stage. And he may well win. But I'm going with Probabil to beat Dice Roll. But chances to Behemoth, definitely. Bo Rosser, definitely. And the other two I'd consider Groundswell. He's a Caulfield Guineas place getter. He's always been up in the weights for the last 12 months. All of a sudden, he's got 52 kilos in a race that he can run well in. And the Freemans have done this before with like a horse like Santa Ana Lane winning this race with a lightweight. And the other one I would include, if he gets a start, and that's the big if, is the first emergency I'm Thunderstruck, who is a real X factor. He comes through winter and you'd say, well, maybe that form is not good enough. But a recent trial at Caulfield was absolutely off the charts. So I would think that that's the reason he's been nominated for this race. And I'm very wary of him. But I'm going with Probabil.
All righty. Quinny, there's a bit of discussion on that one. And so there should be for a Group 1 event and feature. What's the market say?
Probably has been $5 into $4.80, the second elect at that quote. Bo Rossa, a $4.60 favourite. Then we've got Behemoth, $5.50. The first emergency, I'm Thunderstruck at $8. And Sierra Sue, an $11 chance. Dino, with I'm Thunderstruck, he's such a beautiful big striding horse. His two defeats, though, in his career have both been at Caulfield. Do you think that's just circumstantial, or do you think the track is a little bit of a worry?
Oh, the first time he was too inexperienced and he got into a very fast race too early, and the second time was the total opposite. It was a leader's track and he tried to make ground out wide. And I do think he's a better Flemington horse, but he got round the valley okay, and I just think it has been circumstance a little bit.
What do you make of number 6, Buffalo River, first up tomorrow?
I see you've tipped him.
Jeez, I thought I've got it past half. I'm safe here.
Look, he's going okay. He's trialled okay. I think he's a really good, you know, middle of the road Group 2, Group 3 horse. Whether he can maintain that strong gallop, because he likes to run along and he's going to have mates with him, that would be my query.
So quick.
He's very so quick, sharp.
Nothing Dino. Gets past Dino.
Very sharp, our man, Dino. Okay, all right. So that's the market. That's the update from Dino for the Group 1 Rupert Clark Stakes tomorrow over the 1,400 metres. It's the third leg of the quaddy. Please, Rammer, can I have the numbers?
2, 14, 1, 5, 8, and 17.
2, 14, 1, 5, 8. There is a protest. Well, this is controversial. This is absolutely controversial. Protest off the SMS. 7 SMSs have just come through saying you read the wrong numbers in the second leg of the quaddy. Dino, I'm going to go to you first. What are your second leg numbers, please?
I've got a bad feeling I've texted them incorrectly to my man.
What do you mean? Private text between you two.
Hey, we're very close, Dino and I.
What are the numbers for the second leg,
yeah,
please?
No, it is my error. It's actually my handwriting that I. That's a bad error by me. They are 6, 4, 11. 15, not 5, was where I got wrong, 2 and 7. So my apologies.
It was Rammer's fault. Don't worry about
that. No, my fault. I'll take it.
That's why they put rubbers on pencils.
That's why people make mistakes. On pencils.
So what was the runner we accidentally put in? So we put in... do we leave that runner in now? Because we know what happens if we take it out.
Nice order.
It's got to go in.
He's... Not a bad horse, I can't do that.
Oh. Good. I love it. Love that. Strong. He knew what horse he was talking about. It was the wrong number. That happens. So protest is upheld. we'll get Johnny Henry to give us the latest dividends for that shortly.
The amended numbers.
The amended numbers. Protest upheld for the second leg. So those numbers again, 6, 4, 11, 15.
15.
2 and 7. Don't even think that 5 exists. Just pretend it's not even racing.
Gone. Wasn't even spoken about.
Let's get to the last leg of the quaddy while we're here. Caulfield tomorrow, Group 1 Racing. The number 9, race number 9, is the last leg. 1,200 metres, the Ned's How Now Stakes. The Mares, Group 3, 4-year-olds and up, Dino. And there are 14 going around. And Bella Nipotina for the Mayor Eustace camp with Sue Williams in the saddle is favourite in a very open market. $5.50 at tab.com.au.
Oh, yeah, it's a very open market, Daniel. Very open race.
You sound a bit stressed about this one, Dino.
Oh, if you've got this far, you're not sort of counting the money, that's for sure. I'm going to tip Geist down from Sydney. We've seen her here before in Melbourne. She's a talented mare, and I think her two runs this time in have been terrific. She's a bit of a backmarker. She'll need a bit of luck, need a bit of D. Oliver magic, but I'm going with her without any great confidence. Bella Nipotina was a touch unlucky last start, got badly held up when she needed momentum. Express Pass beat her by a couple of lengths, but I think she should have gone very close. She's got a very good chance. Chassis put in an unbelievable run last start, second to Probabile. You've just got to take it on face value that she's going well. She won 3 starts back. She was close up 2 starts back, had to freshen up, and then just ran the race of her life and seems to really like Caulfield, so I'm giving her a chance. La Mexicana. Be interesting if we get that little bit of rain. I think that's all she needs is just a little bit of fire out of the track, and she improves enormously. She's got some hope, and I'm giving little chances to 7 Bonds Abroad, who's trialled up really nicely. And even 14 Smoke and Val, we've seen her in Melbourne before, and she's not far off the pace at this sort of grade. She's only won the one race, but she is a talent. She's big odds, and I wouldn't want her knocking me out of the quaddie. I think she'll be running on late. But I'm leaning to Geist, but a very tough race.
All right, tough race, tough way to finish. Quinny, what are the punters saying?
Bella Nipotine has been the best backed runner here, 550 and rock solid at that quote. Geist is currently an $8 chance, but some of the runners we've got in the quaddie here include Smoke and Val, who's at $21, and Bonds Abroad, who's at $51. So plenty of value there for the quaddie. Dino, we've left out the third elect Night Raid. What's the little concern there?
I think she's a better horse second up. She's trialled quite well, and she's definitely got a chance, but I think if she wins tomorrow, it's a bonus. I think she really hits the mark second up, so that's what I'll be watching for with her.
And with La Mexicana, has been heavily back two runs back this campaign. You made a case where she can certainly be in the finish if the rain comes. Do you think punters will stick with it? Do you think she'll be the one that is backed again? Or after probably being a little bit costly at two outings this preparation, punters might abandon her third time in?
Yeah, there's a few little things. They put a tongue tie on her first time. She might have had added fitness. As I said, the rain may come. And by later in the day at Caulfield, often running on down the centre, and that's where she's going to be, it might be a good play. So I think she'll be well in the market. And, well, I don't think there'll be any drift on her or any real knock on her. She's just now just got to go and win another race.
All right, sounds like there's some value in it tomorrow if we can get the quaddie with Dino's numbers. What are the last league numbers, please, Remo?
9, 3, 6, 4, 7, 14.
Now, you're not going to believe this. There's some feedback coming through from our listeners. Yes,
I can imagine where this is going today.
Now, what about poor old Gaz in Perth, who listens to us and loves us? And it's great to have Gaz.
Gets up early.
Gaz gets up very early for this, makes a special effort. And we spoke about him last week. He texted in a couple of weeks ago, I reckon it was, where he did his knee. In the Kimberleys and the waterfall. So he's come back. He says, you're not going to believe this half. It gets worse. I was doing a balancing act on the crutches out in the back fridge, grabbing some ice to top up the game ready machine that's now helping with the grade 2 torn hamstring I caught while going to the loo during the week. The plane would be giving Big Dog's Twisted Jewels a run for its money, he says. So he's poor old Big Dog's been implicated in this. Are there any chance of the numbers again, says Gaz. So we better get them for Gaz. Lads, I missed the quaddie. This is from Joe. As I was putting the house on Knight's Order in race 7, it's a bit of feedback there. Hi, guys. This is Gav the Greenskeeper. Can I have Dino's numbers again, please? I'm a perfectionist, unlike Cole the Curator. They just scribble these two. And now I have scribbles all over my page. This is from Justin. Hi, guys. Missed the quaddy numbers as people kept ringing me asking me how I got Peter Volandis to change his mind about the Melbourne Storm game time. Justin Rodsky, that's from. Gentlemen, can you please repeat the quaddy numbers? I'm just recovering from a heart attack after hearing the great man's birthday bonanza meals yesterday. That's from Jenny Craig. And then this one, half, I was teaching a 232-centimetre Chinaman to play full forward whilst wok-frying Quinny's hair for my birthday dinner and missed the quaddy numbers. Can you please get Rama to read them out again, says Juppy in Bendigo. So there's a lot of stressed people at the moment, Rama, that don't have the numbers. Can you go through them again?
Race 6, 3, 10 and 5. Race 7, 6, 4, 11, 15, 2 and 7.
Yeah, good work.
Race 8, 2, 14, 1, 5, 8, and 17. Race 9, 9, 3, 6, 4, 7, and 14.
Righto. They are your official quaddie numbers tomorrow for Caulfield on the Friday form with Dean Lester and Nick Quinn. Dino, what about a formula bet for one of our punters? How can you help us this week?
Gee, I hope Gaz, with all of his bad luck of late, didn't get RSI writing all those numbers down. Dale Hooper of Pakenham is our contestant. And for Dale, we're having $40 to win. Race 1, number 4, Heller, $40 the win. Race 6, number 3, Anavisto, $40 the all-up of the pair. Race 1, number 4, into race 6, number 3, for Dale Hooper of Pakenham.
All right, 1, 4, 6, 3 for Dale. Quinny, what's it come to, please?
Well, Anavisto's actually firm since Dino tipped it on air, 250 into 240. So we've got Heller now a $3.90 chance, Anavisto at 240. The all-up comes to 936 pre-multiplier.
936. Good luck to you, Dale. Hope it goes. Gangbusters for you. I'm going to read this one from Adam in Caulfield too. It's, hey, half. Sorry, I've been trapped in a synagogue all week and only just got out. Can you please repeat the quaddie number? So hopefully Adam got the numbers for us.
The one above IGA.
I thought that might have been him on the roof. What do we need now? Do we need the Ramaruffi?
Ready.
Ready to sting the bookies? This is Rammer's Ruffy for the all-new Kia Stinger. The perfect balance of power and refinement. Book a thrill ride and experience the new Kia Stinger.
Yes, we love the Kia Stinger. Vroom. That's how it sounds on the road. We had our $16 on-top selection. It's not the Ruffy, Dino. Where have you gone, Dino?
Well, this isn't as long a price, Daniel, but there's a little bit of method in my madness, hopefully. In race two, number three, William Thomas, who at the moment is only a field of eight. If you back him now, and even if there's a scratching because of the way the fixed odds work, we still get paid for third if he happens to run a place. So I think he'll go very close to winning. First run for Lindsay Smith. He actually won this race 2 years ago, ran third in it last year. I think first run for the new stable, William Thomas for me, race two, number three.
Race two, number three, William Thomas, Quinny. What's that come to, please?
Currently $10 the win, $260 the place. So, Dino, it sounds like that $260 on offer is especially appealing. If you were to spend $10 on the horse, how would you sort of stake it?
4x6.
4x6. That's exactly what I'll do.
Righto, 4x6 for race two, number three, $10.260 for the Rammer Ruffy. Getting involved, that gives us six races of the nine.
Lovely.
Rammer covered. That's what, and he's gone
no
above and
beyond.
Football
tomorrow. Lovely day.
It's going to be. Brent Harvey, from having plenty to say about the world, he joins us again on the Friday Footy Preview / Chat in this bye week. Boomer, good morning.
Good morning, boys. It's a weird week, this one, isn't it? Yeah. Win a couple of prelims and you think the grand final is just around the corner, but no, another 8 or 9 days for us. So push through, get some gardening done on the weekend and launch into a big grand final week, hopefully.
So you've decided to sit off the lawnmower until the weekend because you've got time this week.
Well, it sort of looks like that. I'll probably jump on it today for half hour or so and clean it up a little bit before I launch into a solid attack tomorrow. But it's probably... Hopefully, I think it's going to rain, the forecast said, so hopefully that can hold off for a little bit.
Talk to Adam Gell over there.
Adam Gell. Adam Gell. Who else?
Adam Brown? Bun. Adam Bun.
Adam Bun. Adam Bun.
Interesting 48 hours of weather.
No doubt about that, John.
Who is your favourite weather person, Whitey? All time.
No, I tend to go to the bureau, the meteorologist.
The bomb.
Behind the scenes.
Are you suggesting that the presenters on the news aren't meteorologists?
They're not people that I'll be sort of going to. They're not my go-to people, to be honest. They're just presenting the information.
If you like Mike?
They'd be offended.
Probably I like Mike on Channel 10.
They're meteorologists.
Who are?
Well, Jane's a meteorologist.
Mm. I think she might be.
Well, that's what I said.
And Mike, I don't think Lavinia is.
Mike is.
What about Rob Gell?
What's that? No, yeah, but he doesn't do it anymore. He's the guy that we used to talk to all the time here on Saturday morning.
Not sure. Fine. Boomer, back to the footy because we got sidetracked there. I don't know how that happened.
Rabbit's fault.
Brad Scott's been given the job as the AFL general manager. He's an old coach of yours. In fact, Laura Kane's at the Kangas as well. Like they're just ripping people out of your footy club, Boomer, to take the headquarters. Will they do a good job in their roles from what you know about them as people?
With Brad, it's a tough one because I didn't really see him do too much other than coach.
Yep.
So in terms of his management skills, I'm not 100% sure of. I'm sure he'll do. I mean, the AFL are not going to appoint somebody that's not up to the challenge. I know Laura Kane has obviously taken a role up with the AFL as well. She's been really good. She's every year you see her grow into her position. So it's unfortunate for the Kangas that all our good people get poached, but. It's also
people. You got one of reason. Scotty's been out for how long?
No. Well, I've been at the football club for a long time, half, and I see one every 2 or 3 years. Get Jenny Lufton's been there. Shane McCurry went to the. I could keep going, but all our good people get poached. That's a good thing for our football club. So that's you know what happens, mate. When you're going well, not so much this year, but when you're going well, people leave for bigger and better things. But good on them. Good on him. I hope Brad does a good thing. It'd be nice to know what's on his agenda for the game in a as a whole.
What would you, if you were chatting to Scotty, just caught up for a coffee, walking around the park with your mask off when you weren't drinking, of course, mask on. Yeah. What would you want him to do? What if you could fix the game or have one thing to solve, Boomer? One problem to solve. What would it be?
You know what, Half? It's probably not to do with our game. It's the underbelly of that. It's I look at the under 18 system or the under 19 system now, and I'm not 100% sure we've got it exactly right. with our coaches and things like that. So I think there's a massive room for development in our game. And it can't be like this, but if you have a look at the states where you take the NFL or you finish high school in the states and then you go to college for 3 to 4 years and then you're coming into the system to play NBA or NFL or whatever sport you choose and you're already 22, 23 years old. In our game, we get drafted at 18. You have a crack, but by 20, I see so many people come in and they're out by 20. But the actual fact is they're not matured enough yet. They haven't had the development and the process that it should have taken place. That's what I believe. And we chew them up and we spit them out. And by 22, they've hit their peak of their powers, but they're out of our system already. So I don't know exactly how it looks, but I think we can do our development programs a little bit better.
You're in this space, Rama. You can jump into this conversation. Now, the college system won't work, can't work, will never work here because it's not the way we do things. Is there another way? From you've been watching kids come through, you've been managing them, working out what's good, what doesn't quite work as well. What would you do? How do you fix it? Or improve it, not fix it,
fix
improve it.
Fix the NAB leagues.
Well, just the pathway into the AFL. Oh. So they come in, like Boomer saying, a bit more mature, a bit more ready to be impacted for players straight away.
Look, it's probably the most tricky question to answer because I've always felt with these elite pathway footballers, they've got their most important year of football plus their most important year of school rolled into one. It becomes so hard for them, like particularly guys that want to truly concentrate on both. You do see middle of the year, these young men getting very, very tired, getting very, very stressed what's going on. It comes to the end of the year, then they're focusing more on their exams, and it's tricky. So they're trying the under-19 look now where NAB League clubs can have more of those 19-year-old players. So they've finished school so they can concentrate on school 1 year and then football the next year. I don't think there is a perfect answer to it yet. Like, I'd love to see it almost go to like an under-21 style where you can still be drafted at 18, absolutely, but you stay in that NAB League system until an under-21. So it gives you a couple of years. Now, that probably hurts local football, I think, because local football clubs are relying on those players to come back and play if they're not drafted or don't go to VFL, SANFL, waffle clubs.
But you've still only got a certain size list, so you still have the same amount of players.
Yeah. So it gives them a bit more of an extended period in that elite program. Now, some of them get to these elite, as Boomer's son has with the Northern Knights. He's been probably in that system now since under 15s. But in terms of consistently training week in, week out with the Northern Knights, Boomer's son Cooper's probably only done that for maybe 12 months. Not even now, because of the pandemic we're in, he wouldn't even have really experienced it. So I love to see, and I think what you do there is if you've got him in that elite pathway program for longer, you're going to get more mature. You're going to get more refined footballers coming out. If they're ready at 18, great. AFL clubs draft them. Some are just simply not ready, Whitey, until they're 21. And we see that at times in the VFL system, that guys probably get missed. Now, if they're still in the NAB League programs, elite pathway programs, maybe that's a way of getting more of those 21-year-olds drafted. I'm not sure.
I guess that, Rama, they're doing something similar this year. You can get drafted as an 18-year-old, but if you don't get drafted, you can still play next year as a 19-year-old. Yeah. So you're just saying extend that to 21.
Extend it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very, and Rama's right, it's a very hard question. And I'll just like the AFL just to chuck a little bit more money at the under-18 competition or under-19 competition and give them access to better people. I mean, the coaches right now are coaching the female under-19s, the male under-19s, doing the 17s boys as well. So there's three teams that they got there, and I think they can just get lost in that. I just think the AFL can put more money into the development programs, get really good coaches. It might be, it doesn't have to be a name, but just someone that knows their footy, as I'm sure there is, but surround them by really good people as well. Because the under-17 competition, in terms of the development, is huge. But they're just volunteers at the minute. They're only volunteer coaches. I reckon you need to really ramp that up and spend some money at that level.
It's my firm belief that all the elite pathway programs need a GM of football. So full-time.
Yep.
They need a full-time coach.
They've all been stripped back now in the, back in the last 12 months, haven't they?
They need a full-time high-performance fitness coach. And most importantly, because these boys and girls are at their most vulnerable in these years, a PDM, a welfare manager there that's full-time that they can talk to constantly.
I think one of the biggest
problems... sorry, go on.
Yeah, sorry, Brian. I was just going to say that I understand this conversation. It's not a new conversation, but I wouldn't say we're necessarily in crisis, but with what has happened in the last 2 years for the young 16 and 17-year-old boys that are wanting to become AFL players, their whole development program has been compromised.
Compromised, completely.
So we might not necessarily see the impact on this for the next 3 or 4 years until we realise that there is a dearth of talent coming through or they haven't been developed appropriately, which is not the fault of anybody. It's just the reality of so many people haven't played, young men haven't played football in the last couple of years. And how many are 14 or 15 that have stopped and then don't go back to it? So this could become
a
10-year issue.
To embarrass you, but I'll use Boomer's son as the example. He's a highly talented kid, highly talented, highly skilled. But I think Boomer would agree, he needs to be in the program to see what other kids are doing, to see how these other kids are training, because he's got every skill, and the finishing touch on him will be the next stage of, well, okay, how do you work hard now to become an AFL player? What are the characteristics you need to work hard, Boomer?
Yeah, and you're spot on, because the environment that Cooper's in at the minute is, and not only Cooper, we can use him because he's close, obviously, to me, but the environment that they're in now is they've trained together in a Northern Knights sense and played two games to try out for the Vic Metro for about 8 weeks. Mm. Now, they've just been on their own now for a long period of time. It wasn't for school football, which is, I mean, Cooper goes to Assumption, so it's not the high-end football for him. But you're right, he needs to be around the elite kids around the area to say, gee, look the way he goes about it. His skills are so much better than mine. Because what happens? It creates challenges for them, and they want to get to the next kid, and that's how football. And I look at young Tom Powell from North Melbourne this year, who played Sandful football under 18s last year. We drafted Will Phillips at pick 3 or 4, whatever it was, and we got Tom with our next pick. Tom went way past Will early in the year. Like, he played well before him. He was so much more advanced because you're right, Waddy. We're in a pandemic now where the Victorian boys didn't get to play footy. So I'm not even talking about that. I still think our resources underneath, all the money that the AFL make, put it into the development, and then those kids become better. They become better quicker, and then we see some improvement in our game.
But, yeah, we are in a pandemic, which makes it even more important that this is assessed and improved now. And I just wonder whether we go back to under-19s and have, rather than the alignment to an Oakley Chargers or whatever, we actually have an AFL football team, have an under-19s and go back that way. Because then they can have access to people that are already in an existing football.
But the problem is with that, it compromises the draft. If you're aligned to an actual AFL team.
Yeah, true.
Then an AFL team can then say, oh, geez, this kid's good. And you can almost sort of like...
Hide them away
for a fair period of time. So I like the way the system is now in terms of the regions and how they play. It's just continually refining it. You know, what's best? How are we going to develop the very best footballers? And using Victoria as an example, 55% of the draft come out of Victoria. So we need to continue to refine it. We need to continue to make it better, not strip it back half.
Boomer, Richmond announced through the week, and in fact, I'm not even sure who announced it first, whether it was Richmond or Trent Cotchin himself, but Trent Cotchin standing down as captain of the Tigers after 188 games and 3 premierships, of course, the longest serving captain in history. Actually, Rama, I'll get your take on this too before we get to Boomer, because you're in the cut and thrust of all this sort of stuff from a management perspective and dealing with players this end of their career who've had unbelievable impacts on footy clubs, and how big a decision this actually is for Trent Cotchin to stand down.
Oh, enormous. Enormous, because he's given his heart and soul to doing that for an extended period of time. And you've got to think back to 2016 where he was really questioned about his leadership and what type of person he was. and then for the next 4 years to go and win three premierships and play in a prelim final and really lead that football club.
Yep.
And he led it in a different way. He led it through vulnerability of about who he was. And captains usually half in our area, that's not them. That's not how, and Boomer, that's not how they led. They didn't lead through vulnerability. They led through actions and words and real principles. So Trent was such a different captain. He will leave an enormous legacy forever on the Richmond Football Club because everybody was scratching their head wondering if Richmond could ever get back to what they were.
Mm.
And Trent drove those standards along with Damien Hardwick and a few of the other senior players. So he can walk away from that position as captain. Hopefully he's still got a few more years of football left in him, but knowing that he's done everything humanly possible to put Richmond so much back on the map.
Boomer, you'd be surprised to know that the Chief wasn't overly vulnerable at the time back in Hawthorn when I was working under the big fella as leadership. So it's changed since then. Now, what was your take on it? Have you come across anything like this?
Yeah, well, North Melbourne did a similar thing. So can I, first, before I get into that, I find it really, really funny in a leadership role. So the year before Richmond embarked on their 4 years of, you know, really good football, Trent Cotchin wasn't a great captain by, not that's not my opinion, and it's probably not yours as well, but from everybody from an outside through the media, he wasn't a great captain because Richmond weren't winning. They turn that around and they start winning and becomes the best captain in the competition. And now they didn't make the final, so his captaincy's not so good again. So I think we've got to be a little bit careful about rating the captaincy against wins and losses.
Yep.
But I agree with Rammer. He was a captain. For me, the word care comes into it, and you could see from afar how much he actually cared. And I've heard a lot of stories about how much he actually cared and how vulnerable he was as a captain. And he changed the landscape of that, because that's exactly how I led. I was by actions and actions only, probably. Now, I don't know if that was a good way or a bad way, but that's what I knew. Trent Cotchin certainly leads by his actions, but there's so much more to him as a captain. So I think he's done a fantastic job, and he will leave a massive legacy. Three premierships, holding up that cup. It's a huge feat. So congratulations to him, first of all. So, yeah, we did something similar at North Melbourne. So when Brad Scott came in, Adam Simpson was the captain. And Brad spoke to Simo, and Simo stood down as captain, and I became captain while Simo was still there, so I could lean on a good leader.
Yep.
And then exactly the same thing happened when I stood down. Andrew Swallow took over as captain and I was still there to help and guide him. So I think it's a good thing.
I was watching the very good broadcast of the Hawthorn Best and Fairest.
Yes.
And Tom Mitchell.
The Peter Crimmins Medal.
The Peter Crimmins Medal. Tom Mitchell is about to join us. Who do you think of all the greats of Hawthorn, who do you think put the medal over Tom Mitchell's head, around his neck?
Jason Dunstall. I'll go with Jason Dunstall.
I would have thought sort of, you know.
Yeah. Michael Tuck.
Yeah. Robert DiPietro.
Lift your sights, fellas. Lift the bar a bit and get to real rare air.
Well, it was funny, right? Because
shut up, idiots. Tom Mitchell's on the line.
You sprinted out of the office on Monday.
It was me, and I had a great time doing it, and very privileged to put the Peter Crimmins Medal around the neck of Tom Mitchell, three-time winner, as presented last night. Mitch, good morning.
The privilege is mine, Harp. I rate you right up there with the greats, mate.
It's very, very good feedback. You need to come in more and be a part of this show more. Shut these idiots up. Congratulations, mate. Your third best and fairest in 4 years. Whitey was talking about it before. The only one you missed was when you busted your leg, and you're probably a bit stiff to lose that one. How does it sit with you?
Yeah, I think it's a nice reward for effort. I think, coming off the broken leg, like that was, in footy terms, probably the biggest challenge I've had to face. Questioning whether I'm even going to get back to play in the first place. And, I suppose to put together an okay season and the team to play some really good footy in the second half of the year, it was not a bad year.
Boomer walks around with his on, his best and fairest. What do you do with all your medals? I mean, there's a fair collection coming together at the moment.
Yeah, they're not around the house or anything. They're just in a drawer. They're not framed or anything. Yeah, the one from last night obviously isn't engraved or anything, but yeah, I just sort of keep them in a top drawer, so if you ever want to rob my house, that's where they are.
Well, we won't do that. We won't do that anytime soon. It does bring an end to the season. Obviously, the chance to sign off on the season when the best and fairest is done. When you sit back and you analyse what's happened at Hawthorn this year, and there's been a fair bit, Mitch. How do you sum it all up?
Yeah, well, it's hard to sum up in a short amount of words, isn't it? Obviously, you know, the coaching situation that probably, you know, consumed a lot of everyone's energy for a couple of weeks there. But I think, you know, everyone's glad that that's sorted now. And I think from a playing point of view, obviously, we did struggle the first half of the year. But I think that the group showed some real character because we were able to turn it around. The second half of the year, we played pretty much all the top eight teams, all the top four teams. And, you know, we were either winning, we had a couple of draws, a few losses, but we really turned it around.
So Tom, the club's clearly transitioning. Obviously, Alistair Clarkson goes, Sam Mitchell comes in. I'm sure Sam Mitchell has spoken to you personally. But what I'm more interested in is when there's great transition at a club, a lot of the time senior players will get together at the end of the season. And I know it's a bit tricky this year with the pandemic, but say, okay, we need to really commit to having a big off-season of training, or we need to really commit to grabbing a young player each and trying to drive them along. Just have those conversations been had yet?
Yeah, they have. Yeah, I think that's pretty natural for every club to do those sorts of things. We're probably trying to find the balance because obviously the last 2 years, COVID impacted, you know, it's taken a toll on everyone. And so Mitch is very keen for everyone to have a break and come back so that we're ready to hit the ground running and train hard. So the conversations have been had and we've put some things in place, but we also need to flick the switch off so that when we come back, we're full of energy.
So we see this wrath of young players that the Hawks have. Which is the one player, which is the young one player that you're speaking to right at the moment going, okay, I want to take you under my wing, or which young player is ringing you and asking you for advice and saying, you know, let's go train together if we can?
Yeah, there's a couple. A few of the young mids, so Connor Downey, who's unfortunately just hurt his ankle, so he's just had surgery yesterday. So been checking in with him quite a bit. And John Newcomb, I think he's going to be a serious player for us, the tackle machine. He had 14 on debut, and he's only played a handful of games, but he's one of those guys that you play with and you walk taller at 19. So pretty excited for him to be a part of senior footy more regularly.
Tom, congratulations on another fantastic year. Why do we hear rumours about you? I find it funny this time of year. You're clearly Hawthorn's best player, 3 best and fairest in 4 years, and probably would have won 4 if you didn't hurt your leg. Why do we hear rumours, and do you sit back and just laugh at these rumours about the trading stuff and that you want to get traded or just those rumours in general?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. You've got to laugh at some of the commentary. I think there's been a few of the Hawks boys' names have been thrown up. Jack Gunston, Chad Wingard, obviously myself. Jag has been thrown up at different times, but, you know, half the time it's just not true. So there's nothing you can really do about it.
Do some of your teammates ring you and say, Tom, what's going on here? What, you're not leaving, are you? Does that actually happen?
No, not really. No, there's like maybe a bit of banter in the locker room, but no, there's no truth to it. So, that's all you can really say. Apparently I'm going to Port, Brisbane, Richmond, Carlton. I'm going to every club, so... you just sort of ignore it and just get on with it.
Do you think
the rumour falls?
Yeah. Do you think, Tom, that most of you, if not all of you, will stay together based on what Sam has said? Because obviously a new coach coming in, things will be different. But from a personnel perspective, do you think it will be a similar sort of list, but just maybe with a focus on giving more opportunities for the younger players?
Yeah, well, I think so. I think if you know, completely overhaul the list, then the younger players become quite exposed. You need senior players around, I think, to help educate. And, you know, they're the ones. I look back at my career when I was younger, and it was Josh Kennedy, Jared McVay, Reece Shaw, these type of guys. If they weren't around to sort of lead you the way, then the younger players don't actually become the player they have the potential to be, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So you need plenty of examples around to look at, you know, whether it's in the gym, in the, you know, preparation, in the meeting room, in the educating side of things. You need to be seeing that stuff everywhere, because I know for me personally, that's what makes you the player that you become, and it's the same for every player, I think.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.